Welcome to the Mindset Evolution podcast, powered by Self-Recoding, world-class consulting and coaching services that you can access at selfrecoding.com. Self-Recoding is a unique blend of neurohealing modalities that will empower you to reach your full potential. Join thousands of others who have experienced rapid results in their journey of personal growth. Now enjoy our show, where we bring you tools for a powerful mind with your hosts, Kathy Tate and Daisy Papp.
And hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bold and Blonde Mindset Evolution, the podcast that gives you tools for a powerful mind. I am Kathy Tate, your host from Australia. With me, as always, your host from America, Daisy Papp. Hi, Daisy.
Hello, my dear friend, Kathy Down Under. What is up your sleeves? Come on, bring it on. Bring it to the table.
Well, Daisy, as you know, unofficially, we are talking about relationships. And I thought we'd throw one in here about feeling rejected.
Okay. When did it happen to you last?
That's a great question. I haven't been in a relationship for a super long time, so I'm not even sure that I could pinpoint it. But I think feeling rejected and being ignored are synonymous for me. I find it highly hurtful and disrespectful when I'm ignored. And that for me is a form of feeling rejected. What about you, Daisy?
I'm thinking about it and I do not recall. It must be a long time ago that I felt rejected, because there are many occasions where we might feel rejected. I'm speaking about relationships overall and not solely intimate relationships, because a colleague can make someone feel rejected. A teacher may feel rejected by the principal. A student may be rejected or may feel rejected by a teacher. A child may feel rejected by a parent. A sibling might be rejected from other siblings. Peers might feel rejected from other peers or from other people. So I may even feel rejected when I'm trying to get closer to my horse and then my horse is just not in the mood. Or you with your cat. Maybe you feel rejected by your cat because you are in the cuddly mode and Pepper has a different agenda on its mind. So I think it is important to understand one basic truth. To me, it's truth or fact. No one can make you feel anything, period. It is me responding to what I'm perceiving and the meanings I'm giving to what I'm perceiving. And then my body kicks in, because the body-mind connection is inevitable, if we like it or not. So for example, I'm walking down into the stable and I see my friend has a horse there as well. And the moment I see them, it appears to me as if they had looked at me and we made maybe for a brief moment eye contact, and then they're walking away. Now, all sort of movies may start in my head, but it depends on my attitude and it depends on what meaning I give to my perception, what I'm perceiving through the five senses, how I evaluate it, and then my body will respond with a matching feeling to what meaning I gave. And maybe they just left for the bathroom. Maybe they didn't even see me walk in. Maybe it just appeared as if they saw me. Now, let's clarify, no one can make anyone feel anything. We are all, every single one of us, is responsible for how we respond. And if we have reactions, then we still have some homework to do when it comes to our inner world. Where are the triggers? What are the triggers? And why does it trigger me still? And for example, if I may feel rejected, where does it come from? Maybe my parents didn't want me. That can be a huge traumatic event. And babies have a great sensory system. And for them, it's about life or death, because when they are not taken care of, they will die.
That's interesting you say that, because I think generally we don't really think that we have any memories from younger than a certain age. But in fact, I think that the impact of some of these things on us, whether we physically can remember them at all, is still there, right?
I take it very simply to the basics. Energy can only be steered or transformed. Energy cannot be lost. Meaning, let's say there's a woman getting pregnant. And in the past, where there was no birth control, where there were no hormonal impacts from the outside world through pollution or other poisons that humans are exposed to nowadays, then most women were very much in contact with their body. They noticed when they were pregnant very quickly. Now, I heard of women that were realizing that they were pregnant in week 14. Now imagine, now there is a baby, not a baby yet, an embryo growing in mommy's womb and not being noticed, not being acknowledged, not being respected. I wonder if it can or cannot feel rejected. I don't know what's going on. Usually we cannot say for certain the intellectual levels of an embryo. Nevertheless, I have clients, plenty of my clients actually have emotional burden that they still carry from the time before they were born. It's not only that we only have memory from a specific age on, but in the subconscious mind, everything is recorded, even prenatal, meaning pre-birth. Now, where does it come from? And I understand in the past where we lived in tribes and humans lived in caves and so forth, that it was really life-saving when you belonged and you did not get rejected, because if you would get rejected or feel rejected, then you may act awkwardly and then maybe you are excluded, and that meant secure death back in the days when I speak about evolution. But today when I walk into the stable and my friend turns her back on me, that is not really about life or death. Nevertheless, it may feel as such. Why? Because my body is responding to something I'm perceiving and I'm evaluating it. And that happens in milliseconds, so it's most of the time not even conscious. So now what do we do with it? Even if it was the case that my friend in the stable does not want to talk to me, and that's the reason why she turned her back on me, and not because she didn't even see me, because she was already somewhere else in her mind. Even if she would truly, consciously, and purposefully walk away, why would I want to hang on to that friendship at that very moment when the behavior clearly shows me she does not want to do anything with me?
Okay, but that might be an assumption too, because it may have nothing to do with you. Well, probably almost certainly has nothing to do with you as to why she turned away.
Maybe yes, maybe not. We don't know. But instead of me kicking in my super movie producer headset, where I'm starting to make the moves. Oh, maybe because last time I didn't offer her sugar. Maybe last time I didn't give her the wrap for the leg for her horse. Maybe last time I didn't share the hay with her. Maybe last time I didn't hold her horse because I needed to go to a next appointment. There are so many things that may happen. And my mind movie, when that kicks in, I want to stop it before it kicks in. And I can shortcut that by telling myself or reminding myself, why would I want to connect right here, right now, when apparently for any reason, it's not a good time.
Yeah. And so I think also when we then stretch this outwards, this whole scenario, and right now you're just talking simply about another person within this example. If we then expand this and look at the masculine and feminine brains, I think we bring in a whole new realm of difficulties, perhaps because of the difference in the way our brains work and the way we think about things. For instance, feminine-brained people seem to be more comfortable with feelings and emotions than masculine-brained people are. And I think that's possibly a product of our upbringing and the environment in which we are raised. There are a lot of typical behaviors in raising boys and girls that I don't know that we're really aware of, even though they're quite pronounced, just in the way we treat little boys and little girls is quite different. For example, if a little boy got angry versus a little girl getting angry, I think the parents respond quite differently to that. And that's just one example in a whole heap of stereotypes that are used in our world, whether we realize that we're using them or not, they're there because they've been handed down through generations. And I think that produces adults that are quite different and handle these situations quite differently.
I think it is very subjective how we handle situations. And it's very rare that two people related or not related biologically will handle it exactly the same way. So it's not solely different because of the masculine architecture and the feminine architecture of the brain. I think when we look at that, the masculine brain owners have much better vision due to evolution, the majority, I'm not generalizing, than women. Why? Because in the past, when they were hunting, they needed to have very good vision. And they communicated when there were several hunters trying to take that big animal down. That one look was enough because they couldn't communicate because they would have chased the animal away. Women, on the other side, they are very much ear-related, meaning they like to hear it. And that is why the feminine architecture of the brain is the think out loud solution finder. And that may cause a sort of feeling rejected among these two groups because she can bond through communication. He can bond without communication. Now, let's say my brain is more feminine and there is someone I'm having a relation with. That can be business, that can be family, community, intimate, spouse, children. And they have a more masculine architectured brain. And I'd like to bond with them through speaking. So when they don't feel like speaking, then I may feel rejected because I may feel ignored. Because I would like to bond and they do not give me that feedback that they want to bond to, because I may not be aware and then I feel ignored, or maybe my movie kicks in, my inner movie, my head movie kicks in. Oh, they're not talking to me. They don't like me anymore. They don't love me anymore. Well, they just have a different bonding style. Again, it goes back to self-development. Every single one of us is responsible for their own self-development. The more I know how I function, the better I will be able to handle situations in my life and stop taking it personally. And also, I may be able to slow down when I'm so fast in evaluating situations. They mean this, that means that. Not talking to me means they're ignoring me. Maybe they're just simply not in the mood of talking. Let's say when I speak on a weekday for 13 hours with clients back to back, I have no interest in communicating at the end of the day verbally. Zero. Now, take it personally. Enjoy. It's yours. Shoebox. When we understand that, for example, feeling hurt, feeling rejected, feeling ignored, these are things that happen in the mind. The emotions, the energy in motion, that happens in the body based on what we think, because we evaluate it, we give it a name. Life can be much easier, I think, when we decomplicate it and respect other people's desires as well. If I don't want to speak, can you respect that? Because what does it say about you when you can't respect it?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think that it once again brings to the forefront that we have to come back to self and stop projecting things on our partners or the people in our lives. And remember that it's not all about us all the time.
No.
It might be from our point of view, but it's certainly not going to be from everyone else's point of view, is it? Mm. Because for them, it's about them. Mm. And you perhaps have no bearing in the situation because they're preoccupied with whatever is going on for them. And here we come along and make the assumption that, oh, that's about us. Oh, now I'm hurt.
Yes.
Now I'm rejected. Now I'm bringing it all on me. Well, that's just being a bit of a drama queen, really, if you get down to the nitty gritty of it, isn't it? It's not about you at all.
Well, none of us is the center of the universe. We are the center of our own life. Certainly, because we have a life sentence. All of us serve a life sentence with ourselves. So we better make that relationship a good one and start liking ourselves. Therefore, start behaving likable to yourself. When I can't stand me, you can imagine that I'm not very likable to be around. And then I try to prove how likable I am to you so I can like myself even less because I leave myself standing in the rain because I'm trying to please you instead of making peace within me.
Hmm.
So when I feel rejected, then isn't it all about that maybe I'm rejecting me? How about me embracing me? How about me taking care of me? How about me making peace with me? Then I can be at peace when you're not at peace with me. Let's say you want to argue. Well, tell me more. I'm not into arguments, by the way, but bring it on. I'm capable of saying that. And this entire, I need to be right. I'd like to inject that here. There are many humans who seem to be allergic towards people who have the need to be right. But let me put it into perspective. So I think I'm right. And I have the right to think I'm right. And any other human has the right to think they are right too. But why would it bother me that they're convinced that they are right when I walk over towards them and say, hey, can you share with me why it looks from your point of view the way it looks to you? So I'm the one who can break that need to be right. And all of a sudden, we get along much better, no matter which relation we are in.
Yeah. Where do you think the need to be right comes from in the first place?
When we observe a little child playing with wood blocks or these little shapes out of wood or plastic, and then you see them, they're 2-3 years old and they sit on the floor and they're just building something by placing one of these building stones on top of the other. They're building it and then all of a sudden it falls over and then they start anew. They're not upset. They find it fascinating. And then they do it 4 more times, 5 more times, maybe the 7th round, they realize, oh, wow, it's my sleeve that really gets there and knocks it over. And then the little child is so fascinated and this enlightenment in its face shows up because it understood something, cause and consequence.
Yeah.
So then what it does, then it starts building again. Now, later on, it starts learning through conditioning, which is, I think, very harsh in many cases, oftentimes not even knowingly, because most parents are ignorant when it comes to that. And most likely many teachers are ignorant as well, that, no, you don't do it this way. Stop doing it this way. So then by the time that child is 8 or 9 years old, it realizes, oh, wow, mistakes are no good. And I better hide when I make a mistake because otherwise I'm going to be blamed and I'm going to be shamed. Now, let's have a look at the human species. We are the only species that is capable of considering a mistake as punishment, that utilizes a mistake to punish. Have you seen some of these funny animal videos when the animal is just falling over or running so fast and ends up in the pool and it's totally wet, or it jumps into the snow and then it feels lost for a moment. They come back to you and they waggle their tail and the cat is happy too. Children are happy too. It's just us humans when we are conditioned to a degree that doesn't really make sense. Have you ever seen a dog naturally being ashamed? Naturally not. Maybe the human conditioned it and domesticated it and trained it to be ashamed. It's just in us humans.
That makes a lot of sense as to the background of why we have this feeling. And I think it's quite strong in a lot of us. I can only speak for myself and the people I know and the way I was brought up, but that really makes a lot of sense to me. And for me, I think it's been a bit of an inner battle too. Do I need to be right in this circumstance? Can I let it go? What does that mean to me? Why am I feeling this way? Why is it so important? A lot of it was tied to my own self-esteem and my own sense of self-worth, that if I was right, it meant that I had higher self-worth. And that was a part of my conditioning and how I got treated by society, or how I perceived that treatment and took it inside. And so that was really tough for me. And so it's interesting to hear that background.
But I'm not saying that is the only reason or that is the reason for the need to be right. But the blame and shame and guilting certainly is not a good advisor or a good route to allow people to feel more confident by exploring and experimenting. Look at many geniuses. They're not genius by chance because they were born like that. No, they played around and they experimented a little more and they just didn't give up. And even when they found a solution, they didn't stop. They continued because they were convinced when there's one solution, there must be more than one solution. And let's have a look at Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. He's considered to have been one of the greatest composers. And I agree, and I like his music, his compositions, but he produced over 600 gigantic works. Look at Da Vinci. How many drawings he made of water. He didn't stop when he once completed a piece of drawing water. No, he did it again and then again and thousands of times. Picasso, I think, left over 20,000 art pieces in this world. So it's not only quality, but it's the quantity that makes us better. Now, for those who have the need to be right, I'd like to give a hint. I'd like to invite you for a thinking process, for thought. Isn't it the case when I hold on to my need to be right that I'm actually excluding myself from learning something new? ?
Yes.
I can still have my desires. I can still have my likes and dislikes, but I can explore to expand. The more I need to be right, actually, I'm locking myself out of learning something new, maybe. Circling back to feeling rejected. Let's say there is a group of people and they're brainstorming about something. And I believe red is the greatest idea. And someone else says green is the greatest idea. And then a third one says, no, I don't want colors, black and white. Let me see how far it goes without my red. And if it is really a good solution to use a little red or all over red, then maybe we will discover that down the line. Maybe some of our listeners are aware that I have some of my artwork exhibited in world-known collections and some museums and galleries. And when I have the empty canvas lay before me, I think to myself, become the best you can be. I allow it to develop. Same with music. Come out, what's in there? It's like tuning into a radio station. I'm not adjusting my radio and say, yeah, okay, so I'm going to search so long until my favorite song that nobody knows and no radio station is playing, but I'm switching so long and adjusting that knob or that dial until that song will show up and I can hear it. No, what is sent is there and I may tune in and I can choose what I'm tuning into. So why is that related to feeling rejected? Feeling rejected, I think, when I go even one step further, kills creativity because it stops me. We are no longer living in caves, the majority of us. Let's evolve.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying about the greats of yesteryear, I'd say, to generalize, because a lot of those very famous, well-known historical figures who were geniuses and brought the world amazing creations were at the time not popular, were ridiculed, were rejected because of social standards of the time. And so I think that's really interesting because it did not stop them. They kept going. Whatever it was within them that created that genius also clearly was compelling enough for them to keep creating over and over despite the everyday rejection all around them. And so I find that really inspiring. Because to me, that says no matter what was thrown at them from the outside, they followed their passion and they followed what internally drove them, whether or not they were getting positive feedback or not. And so I find that extremely inspiring. So thank you for bringing those examples up. And I like what you just said too about it killing creativity because at the end of the day, when we think about our brains, we've evolved from this ancient reptile brain for survival purposes into this modern world we find ourselves, and we have to, I think, somewhat retrain ourselves for the modern environment, because it's not going to be life or death anymore in very many situations. Maybe sometimes, but certainly not like it was back in the day where we were being chased down by saber-toothed tigers and
yes,
having to kill our food and not really knowing where the next meal was coming from as a matter of course. So we're in a very different world with very different surroundings, with very different pressures on us as individuals, and with very different social groups and standards and norms in today's society. And so I feel that we need to keep focusing on evolving to meet those challenges, or we do ourselves a disservice by staying stuck in those old patterns.
One more thing comes to my mind, that not every yes brings me closer to my desired outcome, and every no brings me closer to a yes.
Yeah, it's often said in a sales game to count your no's, because each no will get you closer to the yes that you need. It's a good psychological tool, I think, to prevent you from feeling the rejection of the no's, that perceived rejection of the no's.
And how often is it that, but I want, and then later on it turns out, oh, I'm so glad it didn't come through. How often is that? So it really depends on our attitude, and that is something I see our human family, the one human family, evolving into. Homo humanus, the humane human, who is also more humane with themselves and stops making it more tragic what's not, learns how to heal the inner wounds that we all undoubtedly have, so we can be more humane with ourselves first, and then therefore we will only be able to be humane with one another and all life.
I agree. I think that we do need to evolve, because I think that it will create a better environment for all of us to be happier, to be able to get along better. It would, to me, be a better world for my grandchildren and their children to grow in, without all of this dissent and argumentativeness and always fighting. And I don't feel like we're meant for that. I hope today's discussion about feeling rejected has been helpful. I know that in my younger years, it was a really big thing for me, which is why I wanted to bring it up. We also did a very early episode on rejection a couple of years ago. So if you're super interested in the topic, you can go and look up that episode as well. Just go to boredandblonde.live and use the search box. And if you can't find what you want, reach out to us on the contact page. While you're there, please support us. We would love your support. It helps us stay on air, which brings me to a big thank you to our major sponsor, Self Recoding. Check out selfrecoding.com. And if you would like to work with Daisy or bring her into your corporation for seminars or workshops, just reach out. That's it from us today. We'll be back real soon with another super interesting conversation. We are Bold and Blonde.
Mindset Evolution. Talk to you next time. Thank you for listening in to the Bold and Blonde Mindset Evolution podcast. Please share our show with your family and friends. Together, we make this world a better place for you, for us, for future generations. When you need consulting or coaching, visit selfrecoding.com. Also, please remember to rate us 5 stars and leave a review, and support us at baldandblonde.live. Talk to you soon.